This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Coming to you live from the Cross Country Mortgage Campus in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland. Here are your hosts, Bo Bishop and Nathan Zagura.
All right, let's do it live on a Monday edition of Cleveland Browns Daily. Merely Bo, the great Z. How you doing, buddy?
Great, dude. Great weekend of football. Fun to watch. The snow was falling. It was at least pretty, although, thank you.
Jabuno.
It, I'm over a winter. I'll just say that straight up. I'm done.
Come already?
Oh, my God. So done with it. So cold, so icy.
Yeah.
So nasty. My car, your car's white. Mine is not. Get it washed within 2 seconds. It's
forget it.
Dirty again.
What's your thought on that? Do you try? I usually try to time it to where I can at least get a couple of days out of it versus having to run it right back. You probably have like the pass. With a black car, you almost have to get like a pass. Where you
can I do, yeah. It goes infinite. As often as I want.
Yeah. But it's
because of the salt. So
the salt's
really
outrageous.
And
we have never been this drunk on salt.
No, it's
this is the most salt I've ever seen by a billionfold. I have gone through – I told the story last week. We were on the way to 8 a.m. Hoops out in Lodi, and I ran out of salt, washer fluid almost immediately.
I think they're in cahoots. I think
you're right. I think
salt
you're right.
And wiper fluid people are in cahoots. So, nobody loves wiper fluid more than my wife. Miss K is, nonstop, and I'm like, babe, this is just the, like, you may get it clean for a second, but it's coming right back. Like, there's nothing, you got to just, there's nothing you can do unless it becomes unsafe.
It. Right. So, I must be like Miss K. So, I bought some last Sunday, right?
Yeah.
Completely filled it last Sunday.
Yeah.
Yesterday morning on my way, guess what? Back out to Lodi?
I was out. You guys are the same.
Yeah. I'm good company, man. I stopped at the Pilot out there in Lodi and scooped up a bottle, chugged it right back up. I can't stand having it on there.
But it doesn't matter.
I know, but I can't see. So I feel like that does matter.
Yeah, but then as soon as you do it, it's back. And then
it's undeterred.
And when it's really cold, your blades are frozen, so they don't even get a nice, perfect.
No.
You get streaks
you get
and this.
Streaks and frozen. Yeah, it's a mess. Miss K and I are the same in that regard.
But I enjoyed the football, and I got to say, I enjoyed what we've done to our fireplace, putting that little gas starter in there.
Oh, that's an ease of life.
Game changer.
Yeah, all of a sudden, what's the big deal? No big deal.
A fire on, fire
boom,
off. Boom. And I even bought some like fake logs. I was going to say non-real, fake.
Yeah.
They invented the word for that. Fake logs so that we can, if we just want to have like a little look like a fire,
yeah,
we can. But it's, so shout out. I think it's Northfield Fireplace. They came.
Yeah, those are my guys. Yeah,
they're great.
Guys. Let me tell you something about those guys. Let me tell you something else if you really want to take it next level. So in the main floor living room, we have a gas fireplace with the authentic looking fake logs. And what we did is I put a glass thing around it.
Yep.
To like guard it from like if it were real logs splintering out.
Yeah.
Gives a tremendous reflection.
Yeah, it looks great.
Looks fantastic. And yeah. It was because I was a stickler. I was like, I really want wood burning. And then when in our last house we had it, and I was constantly like dealing with it.
See, this is
burning, and now you got both.
Yeah, I have it all.
You got both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like we took yesterday, I found in my garage.
Yeah.
And we're like, we're going to do this for all football games on Sunday. So we lit it up
this.
Right before the first one. I found probably this thick of a log.
Yep.
Like
big guy, girthy.
And probably about this in length.
Decent length.
So it actually fit perfectly on the grate.
Yep.
Exactly over where the fire came out.
Perfect.
So I'm like,
let's go.
Let's see what we can do here.
Yeah. Stretch our legs.
A whole night. It burned great. And then by the end, it was completely gone. an unbelievable
so
amount.
So satisfying.
Of, oh my God, so satisfying.
God, that's great.
It's only like by winning. I made the bolognese last night. My goodness.
What a real
goodness
treat.
Goodness gracious. It was, I went bison this time.
That's a good way to go. I did that last week. I made a bolognese. Well, I don't really do, I don't use all the carrots. It's more of a, honestly, it's more of like a meat sauce is what I make. I'm not loaded up on the carrots and all
the
that.
Cream. I have carrots in mine.
Yeah.
Here's a, you want a little tip for the carrots?
I think I've used yours.
The carrots, just buy the matchsticks carrots.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then you just chop them up, and it's already fine, and you're finely chopped. You're good. You get that little flavor in there.
Yeah, it's good.
So I just got, and one of the things I got for Christmas was Stanley Tucci.
Oh, yeah.
Who I enjoy.
We like him, yeah.
So he made these pans.
Yep.
And I got one that's like a 6.5 quart big old. That's what I made the sauce in. It was unbelievable.
That's a good time.
It was unbelievable.
I like it.
Couldn't be happier.
I like where your head's at.
Could not be happier. Good football.
Let me tell you this.
As well.
I liked the schedule of the football.
Same.
I like that 3:30. That's the sweet spot right there. Is you're not giving me three on Sunday. I don't need three on Sunday. You get one of each. I was bouncing around with U Sports, so wasn't able to get all of the early game Saturday, but got all the rest of it.
Wasn't much of a game.
No, I got in for the second half, and it was at that point it was cooked. But it's nice to be done at 10 o'clock.
It was great.
It was so nice.
We had a happy accident. Wild card weekend needs to be 2 Saturday, 2 Sunday, 2 Monday. Happy accident. Everybody wins. Then this week, I liked exactly what they did. And then next week, I think they're doing it again, right? Isn't it like?
No, it's doubleheader Sunday. I wish it was one Saturday, one Sunday.
I don't mind doubleheader Sunday because it's you. Don't
it's tradition. It's all of that. But like, I just.
Championship Sunday.
I like
but the times
idea,
are
like,
good, though, right? Isn't it?
Yeah,
like
I think it's 3 and 6:30. I think. Yeah,
perfect.
So the times are pretty good. Look at all these people.
Oh, I told you. Oh, the debutante. Did you see her debutante bow? Look at
debutante
Macarena.
Debutante bow, and then you got
tequila doing
tequila
the Macarena.
Doing the Macarena.
Yeah.
Is that guy ready to be unleashed again?
I think so.
In Indy in a month.
Yeah, I think so.
I look forward to the full reports on that. No, I thought it was money, and I do. I wish next weekend. I do wish it was Saturday. I wish it was one each night. I think it would be really cool. But I. The 3 and 6:30 kicks, to not have an 8:15 kick.
Oh, so freeing.
So nice.
It's like,
so
I'm going to watch this. We're going to have a great time. And then it's going to be what it's going to be.
What was the one was different than the rest for me. And it was Buffalo-Kansas City. Buffalo-Kansas City felt like, and again, I didn't watch all of the Texans-Baltimore, but to your point, I don't think I missed much. The Kansas City-Buffalo game to me felt like the Super Bowl. And not to say that either one of those teams are going to win it.
Sure.
In fact, I don't know if Kansas City, how long they can go the way they're going. I'm never going to bet against that kid again.
Yep.
But the stakes seemed so high from the Buffalo perspective.
Yeah.
Every other outfit out there, and the stakes were high in Detroit, but I never really thought Tampa Bay was going to win.
No.
And the stakes – even in San Francisco, Green Bay, those operations seem so sustainable.
Yes.
That both of them are going to get many bites at the apple.
Yep.
You could feel the pressure of Buffalo.
Yep.
It was tangible, and it felt like a championship game.
And it caused pressure burst pipes.
It did.
An inexplicable, I think, panic move to call the fake punt.
It ends up not harming them because of the stupidest of
ruling
rule
in
the history
in sports. But we can talk about that.
That's another conversation. Yeah. But just a stupefying play. And Romo was trying to justify it. He's like, Jim, they only had 10 guys on the field. They only had 10 guys on the field. That's a good call there. And I'm going, I don't know. DeMar Hamlin, you're down 3 on your own end. If the Chiefs don't get cutesy and go Valdez-Scantling, just run Pacheco, it's done. It's game over. If anybody got up 2 scores in that game, it was done.
Oh, yeah.
There was no coming back from more than down 1. There was none.
Oh yeah.
And instead, they do this absurdity. It doesn't hurt them because of the fumble, but like this, the mentality of it, I thought was insane.
And if you are gonna go for it, just put Josh Allen out there.
No.
Let Josh Allen do it. Be just fine.
Direct snap to DeMar Hamlin. That's what we're doing.
I mean, it would
in our own
it
end?
Could have been a scene out of a movie if he had run the house,
but
he didn't.
Factored in, like, let's make a movie? Like, what are we doing?
I don't know.
That's the best option?
I thought it was ridiculous. And then the pressure, obviously, for Bass on the field goal.
44 yards.
That was it. And, you know, the Chiefs had a lot to prove in that game. I really enjoyed that game.
It was fun. That was a fun game.
It was a fun game. The Detroit game was also a fun game. They're good. Their defense would just like have these like silly, like to let them convert on 4th and 15.
Yeah.
Up 14 was absurd. We'd seen that movie before, the pick, unfortunately, for Baker, who had played the majority of it, played pretty well. You got the whole experience right there.
On Sunday, that was the Baker Mayfield experience.
Yeah.
349 yards, 3 touchdowns, 2 picks. One's not kind of his fault. The other one's absolutely his fault. And he is – people took it negatively, but he's a true – he's a true front runner. When things are going great, he's awesome and he's galvanizing and you have his back and you have all of these things, but there is also a very hard ceiling to his operation. And you saw it yesterday. That's an unbelievable interception to throw there. Not to say you're going to go score and get a 2-pointer. And I don't like that either.
Final drive.
No, he's not a great clutch guy. I mean, that goes way back. Yeah.
But
that was just like, holy hell, man. Like, not there. How do you not there? He could have fair caught it. He threw it right to him. Yeah.
And stared it down.
And just right to him.
Yeah, that was tough. I think the Niners won a game that was not well played by them. Not well played by Brock Purdy for the majority of the game.
Yeah.
You lose Deebo Samuel.
That's crippling.
And then yet, when they needed one drive, Purdy did it.
You and I were going back and forth because Pedro infamously, a couple of weeks ago, you exposed that Pedro compared him to Montana.
Yeah.
Blasphemous.
Ridiculous.
And then, but to their credit, they needed one.
They got it.
Yeah.
They got it.
That Green Bay operation's going nowhere. I think Love's pretty good, and I think they've drafted well.
Yeah.
They do have a big hiccup, this is 3 times now for San Francisco, though.
Well, they can't handle the Niners.
Can't handle it, no.
The thing with Love was, and you hope that he – I feel like the way that game ended and that decision can go one of two ways. Either that's like, all right, he's gotten his playoff choke out of the way. He's not going to do anything stupid like that, or it could affect him for a long time.
Becomes like who you are. Tell the people what I tweeted you, what I thought, like subconsciously what I tweeted you, who it was.
Oh.
On the Love play. I typed Bryce Young.
You called him Bryce Young. Yeah.
That's like Bryce Young. Yeah. I had my head in. Well, that's a Bryce Young throw. Just
how about it?
Chuck it into the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was brutal. Those three games were all really fun. They were fun games. I never thought Detroit was going to win. The other two were very much in doubt. I thought maybe Green Bay could spring a monster upset, and it certainly
looked like it.
Yeah, and I thought Buffalo, to me, it felt like kismet. It thought, okay, you blew it on the punt, you get the ball back, go score. But it was so – even the way they went about it was so – it's like when they missed the deep one, and that's a bomb.
Where is Diggs? Where is he? That was right there. That's on the
bomb.
Money.
How far was that in the air? Was it almost 70 yards in the air?
Right.
He threw it from the 20, right?
All right. When he threw that ball.
Yeah.
Because he just kind of dropped back and threw it. It wasn't like a
– No, he didn't load up.
And it wasn't even like a long developing play.
No, it was like standard drop.
So when he threw it, I'm like – it explodes out of his head. I'm like, there's nobody who's possibly going to be down there. And then it was, and it hit Diggs right in the hands. I mean, I don't know if he lost a step. He has fallen off a cliff. I mean, I say that as somebody who had him in fantasies here. Think about it. We did that thing.
Yeah.
I don't think either one of us drafted him, did we? Did you write down our teams? I'm curious.
I did.
I think your team's going to win, but it's going to be close.
I had Diggs. So I had Lamar, McCaffrey,
okay, baller,
Gibbs.
Baller.
Debo.
Zip.
Flowers.
Zip.
Zip. Diggs.
Zip.
Kelsey.
Good.
Yeah. You had Allen. Baller. St. Brown. Baller. Nico. Zip.
Zip.
Evans. Baller. Pacheco.
Good.
He scored. Montgomery.
Zip.
Zip. Kittle.
Good. 80 on a touchdown.
It's going to be very close. Yeah.
I think you're going to win.
I don't know. I got nothing out of the two receivers. But Diggs was the last receiver picked.
And you know what I'm so mad about is I was going back and forth between Montgomery and Rashad White,
mm-hmm.
and I should have taken Rashad White. If I did, that I think I would have
been. Then I think you're good. I think you might be good anyway, though.
I don't know. Because
Lamar and Allen feels like a wash.
No, Lamar's going to be better.
Slightly. Not by a ton. McCaffrey and...
Better than Pacheco.
Yeah.
Gibbs way better.
Better than Montgomery.
And then Evans, Amon-Ra. I need those two to be massive.
Which I think you will, because Debo did nothing, Flowers did nothing, Diggs did nothing. So you're going to have three.
We'll do it in a – we got some sound
and then
to play.
Kelsey Kittle is – because Kelsey got two. It's going to be tight. Might be close.
It's going to be close.
Yeah.
Both teams did pretty well. Yeah.
Yeah, we did all right. But no, he seemed, yeah, it's, and then Baltimore, I mean, just a buzzsaw in the second half. Absolute Damn buzzsaw.
It. Supposedly Lamar lit him up at halftime. And
yeah, he talked about it postgame. Like, yeah. He said, I can't say what I said in there, but like, I'm on it. It's the biggest bet on oneself we've seen in pro sports in a long, long time. And it's coming up aces.
Totally.
For him.
You got to give Monk a lot of credit. You got to give a lot of all those people a lot of credit. And by the way, I know we all felt like Buffalo's going to do it, but I don't know about you, but once I kind of got to the pregame of that game, what?
Do you remember when we picked it?
We picked it on like...
No. But do you remember what we said? I said, I hate this. I never go against Mahomes.
No.
Since Mahomes has been... Since year one Mahomes, I have picked them to win the Super Bowl, him to win the MVP, them to win every playoff game, and it's worked out a lot.
I know. That was my only blemish on the weekend. Should have taken them with the... I mean, should have taken... But
I just thought at some point...
Buffalo is going
to
do it.
At some point, you got to do it. And it's not. No, I hated it. As soon as I picked it, I hated it.
But when they were doing the pregame and they're reliving some of the great games and all that. And,
I know.
And I was like, the Chiefs are going to win this game.
This is six straight championship games for him. So it's him, Brady, and the Snake, Kenny Stabler. Those are the only guys that have done that. They have done it now with two different builds.
Totally.
Of Kansas City, two entirely different builds. There's going to be a third incarnation of this because Travis Kelce will retire, whether it's after next year, after the next year, after whatever. So there's going to be another version of this. He is unflappable. And I will say this, as you're watching the game Sunday, even if Buffalo would have scored a touchdown, he was scoring a touchdown.
He would have got it back and scored, yeah.
They would have scored.
Yeah.
He would have taken him down, and they would have scored.
I would have liked to have seen
it. I wanted to see it. That's what I felt at the end of it. It was so unfulfilling.
Oh, God. Yeah, it's just over.
Yeah, it did not. The finish did not meet the game.
Not at all.
Because of the missed field goal, then it's cooked. Like, I wanted Buffalo to score. I mean, I was rooting for them. I was hopeful
you
that
tie
they could
game,
do it.
And then Mahomes is going to go
He'll
lead
score,
him.
And then let's see if Mahomes can come back.
And, score.
And that's what I was thinking. You thought for sure that you were robbed of that.
Yeah, Bass, wide right, tough for Buffalo right there.
Very tough.
Yeah, I mean, shirtless Jason Kelce in the box with T Swift, him giving her the heart, him scoring two touchdowns. You saw he had one touchdown in his last 10 games.
Yeah.
And he scored two in this one.
I've had a lot of people come up to me and they're like, why do they keep showing her? What? And then somebody tweeted at me yesterday, like, they don't show everybody else's girlfriend or wife. Everybody else's girlfriend or wife is not the most famous woman on the planet.
Let me tell you something. If somebody was like, in the end, if
what are you talking about? Like, are you kidding me? It's like I grew up a Lakers fan. They show Jack every game.
Yes.
That's what you do. You show, there's Jack.
Let me tell you
this
something.
What you do. We like seeing famous people.
I'll even take it back when Romo was dating Jessica Simpson.
Oh, yeah.
She
sure.
was on. All the time.
For sure. Yep. And Carrie Underwood. Yeah, you're right. That's a great point. All the time. Every cutaway, they'd go to them.
Yes.
You date a famous person, this is what happens.
Somebody dates J-Lo, they're going to be showing J-Lo. Like,
yes. That's it. That's the way that it works.
Isn't hard.
No.
It's not hard.
No. Not Jason Kelce.
I love that guy. Did you see he went down
He's
into
like
the
an
crowd?
Actual bison roaming the stadium.
Yeah. He went down the crowd and brought like little girls up to... Say hi to Taylor Swift. Some girl had a Taylor Swift sign in front of their box, and he went down and brought her
Did he really?
Up to Taylor.
I missed that part.
Yeah.
What a great job out of him.
I know. He hops out of the thing shirtless, grabs this little girl, brings her up to Taylor Swift. And she gets to meet Taylor Swift and then brings her back.
I got to give full credit. Simmons and the cuz.
The cuz?
So Simmons goes, it reminded you of like the 100th minute of the rom-com. And everything is going great, and then you go to meet the boyfriend's parents, and they're out of their mind. Like the idea of Taylor Swift with a shirtless Jason Kelce, and all of a sudden at least an awkward conversation of like, yeah, your brother may have been shirtless and had 25 beers last night, just so you know.
May.
Just so you
was.
Know. And I thought that's pretty much exactly what a rom-com would be. Would lead to a breakup. Yeah. This is my family. You got to love me for me, and then you get back together at the end. It's like, it's a pretty good job. That pretty much is it. Much more on these as we go along. The according to ESPN's Jeremy Fowler, the Browns are going to interview Texans quarterback coach Gerard Johnson, I think it is, isn't it? I think it's Gerard Johnson.
I think so.
Yeah. He played quarterback at Texas A&M years ago, I want to say. Uno's shaking his head, yes. For the vacant offensive coordinator job there. And then Tom Withers reporting the Browns interviewed former Bills offensive coordinator and our quarterback at one point, Ken Dorsey, for the vacant OC job there. Andrew Berry addressed the notion of Kevin Stefanski calling plays or not. Both of these to me would be non that that Kevin would keep play calling. That's what I would say.
I'm with you on that one. So Johnson played in the league on practice squads with the Steelers. Eagles in 2011, Steelers 2012, Seahawks 13, Bears 13, 14, Ravens 16, Cowboys 16. Just practice squad only or off-season member. As a coach, started 2017 with the Niners, Bill Walsh Diversity Coaching Fellowship. Then with the Colts in 19, Colts 2021 Offensive Quality Control Coach. Minnesota Vikings 2022 Assistant Quarterback Coach. Last year, Texans Quarterback Coach. He holds the Big 12 record for throwing 242 consecutive pass attempts without an interception.
He actually played basketball at A&M too to begin with, and then just went straight
football. Second in school history in passing yards behind a couple of former Browns, behind Kellen Mond.
Yep.
Third in total offense behind Manziel and Kellen Mond.
There you go. Yeah. I thought that name was familiar.
Yeah.
There you go. And then Kenny Dorsey was quarterback.
He's supposedly regarded as one of those fast-rising, exciting young candidates.
Jared Johnson?
Yes.
Or Gerard Johnson? I think it's Gerard.
Gerard. That's what I pronounced. Yeah. Gerard.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And then Kenny Dorsey was heir apparent in Buffalo and then was boosted this year.
Did not.
And then Joe Brady jumped in.
Yeah.
And that's the way that that went. But Ken was here. How many years on Ken Dorsey? How long was he here, Gibby?
I think as a player.
Yeah.
I think three.
I was going to say 13 or 14, like 2013.
That's with Chud, right? When Chud was here because there was the Miami connection?
2006 right? to 2008, 3 years.
Oh, no, so that's not Chud.
No.
So probably, I thought there was a Miami connection that brought him here. Well, Butch would have been gone by that point, right?
The Hurricanes. Browns traded to the Browns along with a seventh-round pick in 2007 for veteran quarterback Trent Dilfer after having just resigned by the 49ers.
Hmm.
He was Dorsey. Derek Anderson competed for second string behind Charlie Fry. Dorsey went on to be the third string. He was named a starter for week 17 against the Texans. Fry replaced him just minutes before the game. Blah, 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 blah. And they drafted Quinn, and then he was basically out of there.
Yeah. Okay. No Miami. We had a couple of Miami connections here, but none at that time. All right. So we have much more to say on these games. Our general manager spoke today. We are going to have that for you. So there's a lot of stuff to take from that. That will start coming up next. Andrew Berry from the podium. He will talk a little bit about what has happened in Detroit. What he thinks of Joe Flacco, the coaching staff, Deshaun Watson. It's all coming up. You don't want to miss it. You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, sports betting partner of Cleveland Browns, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between award-winning mattress brand Leesa and home design favorite West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is the culmination of these two companies' shared values: premium materials, meticulous craftsmanship, and sustainable practices. Made with natural latex, responsibly sourced natural wool, and environmentally safe foams, the Natural Hybrid elevates your sleep sanctuary, indulges your senses, and supports a greener tomorrow. Plus, when you purchase the Natural Hybrid, you're also helping fuel Leesa's work with shelters and those in need. Since 2015, Leesa has donated more than 40,000 mattresses to ensure children and families have a safe place to sleep. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Leesa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit Leesa.com/iHeart. That's Leesa.com/iHeart.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Hey friends, Bo Bishop here for my friends at Jim Beam. What do sports and Jim Beam have in common? Both are better when enjoyed with others. Grab a bottle, gather your friends, enjoy the game, because with Jim Beam, you come as friends and you leave as family. Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey, 40% alcohol by volume, copyright 2024, James B. Beam Distilling Company, Claremont, Kentucky. Drink smart. And now here's your general manager, Andrew Berry, at the podium.
All right. So before we get going with all the questions, I actually want to just share a few, I guess call it reflections from the year. And then I'll kind of go into just a little bit of detail in terms of our process, you know, moving forward as we go into the off season. And then I'll open it up for questions. So probably the NFL storyline that I followed most since our season finished is really what's going on with Detroit. And, you know, part of that is just like, you know, my friendship with Brad Holmes, and really excited for him and happy to see what they've, you know, what they've done up there. But it's been pretty cool to see and follow them, you know, given the fact that they've hosted their first home playoff game in 30 years. And, you know, watching the game against the Rams, watching the game against the Buccaneers, seeing the energy in the stadium, you know, seeing the team feed off of it, it's been pretty cool to watch, just, you know, honestly, as an NFL fan. And it kind of got me thinking, you know, what's it going to, you know, look like or sound like or feel like when we're hosting a home playoff game here in, you know, Cleveland? You know, what's the energy going to be, you know, feeding into the week? What's it gonna sound like on the opening kickoff? And as I thought a little bit more about it this weekend, I thought probably maybe the closest parallel to that would have been our last home game against the Jets this year. You know, I think about that night and how much it meant for me, a bunch of you know, really our entire organization, our city, our fan base. And, you know, there are a number of memories that kind of stick out. It's the, you know, the electricity in the air pregame, you know, as our players are warming up. There were, you know, probably wasn't an empty seat. I remember, you know, Nick, you know, whipping out the Batman mask and putting it on and smashing the guitar and kind of working the crowd into a frenzy. You know, I remember, like, the roar of the crowd when we scored our first touchdown. And when the game was in hand, I remember, you know, walking down to the field level and sensing this like palpable anticipation because everybody knew what was about to happen as we were bleeding out the clock. You know, the other thing that kind of stands out to me that is like kind of this concept of family. I remember kind of surveying the field and seeing, you know, Kevin's kids at the sideline in the waning moments, JW's, Paul's. I have my oldest son with me, seeing Joe Flacco's kids in the locker room after the game. But not just in the literal sense, seeing kind of the familial bond between our players and our fans. I remember Jim telling our defensive players, hey, take a lap around the stadium. You know, go enjoy this with the fans. I remember, you know, David, you know, sharing a couple, you know, drink or two with, you know, some of the tailgaters. And that was all really special and cool and memories that I'll take with me for the rest of my life. But the thing that actually stands out to me most from that week happened the next morning. That morning, I got a text from Tom Telesco. And Tom, as some of you know, he was my first boss in the NFL. And Tom, he was a very, very demanding boss. I've told this story a couple times that when I started off in scouting, I would always have to submit my reports to Tom. And they would come back marked up in red pen or red marker with, you know, essentially all this constructive feedback about, you know, this needs to be changed or that. And I would just get so frustrated because I was like, I can never, you know, can never please this guy. Like, he's so demanding. Am I ever going to get this right? You know, until the one day that you get the report back and it's like, there's no red pen. Like, I actually got this right. Like, I actually hit the standard. And so Tom, he sent a text that said, you know, your team had every excuse available to you to be a 10-loss team. And your players, coaches, and staff never flinched. Good job and congratulations. And the reason that memory is so strong for me is for two reasons. One, it was kind of like the no red pen moment, right, from like your first boss in the NFL. But the second part of it is it was really cool to me to see that there were people externally that had sensed, saw, felt what we all had internally on a week-to-week basis with this team. The thing that I'm most proud of, you know, with this group of players, coaches, and staff is all the adversity that they overcame throughout the season. I talked a lot the last time I was with you all about turning challenges into opportunities for this organization. And I thought, you know, the men and women, you know, within the building, you know, our players in the locker room did a phenomenal job of that throughout the season, always getting up off the mat, dealing with every challenge, and really accomplishing something that was noteworthy and special this season for the organization, for our city, and for our fan base. And, you know, this kind of next man or next woman up, you know, mantra, I think it's probably strongest embodied by our QB room. You think about PJ leading a go-ahead drive against San Francisco and then a game-winning drive against Indianapolis the next week. You think about Deshaun, you know, on one leg and with a hurt shoulder, you know, leading us from, you know, playing a perfect second half and leading us down from two scores to beat the Ravens. Then Dorian the next week leading us on a game-winning drive against Pittsburgh. And then obviously Joe playing really well through the last quarter of the season to lead us into the playoffs. But it wasn't just players. It was the coaching staff, too. And that starts with Kevin. You know, Kevin, the way that he was able to lead and manage through challenges and adversity this year was absolutely phenomenal. And we have a smart, adaptable, emotionally intelligent leader who, you know, the crazy part is he's not even close to his ceiling. And this is a guy who hopefully in the next month should, you know, earn his, you know, second coach of the year award in his first 4 years as a head coach. And I know that our organization is in really good hands, both now and for the foreseeable future with him. And I really would be remiss if I didn't mention, you know, Bubba and Jim, who did a phenomenal job of revitalizing the kicking game for us, revitalizing the defense. They were phenomenal additions to the organization and really pleased with, you know, really the work that those staffs did. So moving forward, so this is the point in the year where the next few weeks, it's really reflection and self-assessment. We look at everything that we did, A to Z, on the field, off the field, with the goal of improvement. And it's really not just improvement, but positioning the organization in a way where, you know, we can have our first home playoff game in 29 years, where we can consistently you know, produce playoff teams and deep runs. And ultimately, the goal is to bring the franchise its first Super Bowl. So all the decisions moving forward will be with that goal in mind. And at times, that way lead to, you know, hard and uncomfortable, you know, decisions. But everything will be with that mindset for improvement. And it's because we know that our fans will appreciate it. We owe it to our fans. We owe it to the city. We owe it to the players, coaches, and staff in the organization. That's really our fiduciary responsibility. So with that, I'll open up for questions.
Andrew, since you mentioned Joe Flacco, just your takeaways on how he played, and I guess going forward, given all you guys had to deal with at the quarterback position, have you reevaluated maybe just that roster spot as a priority, the backup quarterback?
Yeah, so starting with Joe, Tom, you know, Joe, he played winning football for us. He did a great job of coming in and really playing at a high level that allowed us to go on a run at the end of the year, play really good football in December, you know, maybe we ended a little bit with a thud against Houston, you know, in the wild card round. But, you know, really pleased with what Joe did on the field, pleased with who he was as a teammate. You know, in terms of the quarterback room, you know, we've always valued the quarterback position. And I think probably if you look at our history over the last four off seasons, we've always been towards the top of the league in backup quarterback, you know, expenditures or resources, whether it was Case for the first 2 years, obviously Jacoby, you know, last year. And then even this year coming into the year with Dobbsy and Dorian. So it's something, you know, I believe that, you know, backup quarterback really is a top 30 position on the roster, Tom. And, you know, we do believe in carrying three, and that's something that we'll probably do moving forward.
So more directly, will you bring Joe Flacco back?
You know, look, I should say this. I should start by saying this. We'd absolutely love to have Joe back. He's a good, you know, good quarterback. And but I guess maybe a little bit similar to, you know, Jacoby last year. It really depends, right? Like, I want to bring all of our, you know, our good players back, and, you know, but you know, there are constraints to that. I'm really kind of both sides of the aisle, but would have no problem having Joe back.
So the plan, with the plan B, if you don't bring Joe back, to be Deshaun as the starter and the DTR as the number two guy?
It's probably too early to say, Jake, honestly. You know, we're a week after the season, and, you know, we'll go through the roster. And part of it does depend on availability and cost. What I can give you is I think it's fair to say that we'll have three quarterbacks on the roster. What that looks like can be a little bit variable just based on how the marketplace bears out.
Andrew, how much of a consideration would it be with Flacco to have the appearance of a guy who took your offense to different heights versus Deshaun, the possibility of division, polarity, and around the team?
Zero. Zero consideration. Zero considerations because of how both individuals are. It's not a concern internally at all.
Can you explain the decision to part ways with Alex Van Pelt?
You know, Jeff, I understand that that's a topic of interest, the coaching staff in general. Quite honestly, like, we're not going to comment on that in detail until the 24 coaching staff is finalized, and then, you know, all those questions will be answered at the appropriate time.
What can you do as a follow-up, and what are you looking for in the next offensive coordinator?
Again, Jeff, every coaching staff question we'll address that when the staff is filled. There's still too much in flux.
Even with the OC change, the plan is for Kevin to still call plays next season, correct?
Yeah, so it's a good question, Jake. I'd say number one, that's something that we always talk about every offseason and kind of the self-assessment part. Part of that depends on where we land with staff and what Kevin's preferences are. Ultimately, that's going to be his decision as he constructs the staff. We've mentioned multiple times, I think that's one of Kevin's strengths. But how that operates from year to year, that's ultimately something that we reassess.
The OC change is not connected to that potential. No.
Is it challenging to evaluate the roster and not, fall into the trap, well, we just had so many injuries, when we get them guys back, we'll be fine, or can you really identify some disparities and some weaknesses on the roster?
Yeah, it's not hard. You have injuries every year, and also there's no perfect roster in the NFL, so there are always things that that you're able to improve. And then probably the last thing I would say to that is, I talk oftentimes about every year is unique. It's not like you just pick up and you week one next year is like the 19th game, for instance. Things really do change. And I think one of the traps that teams or organizations can fall into is just saying like, okay, here's where we were at the end of the year. That's going to be our base case, our baseline level of the roster going to next season. We don't really look at it that way. We try and remove ourselves from the emotion of the season, take an objective analysis of it, and then really project moving forward. So that's probably the best way I can answer it.
Deshaun coming along, and where did things stand in terms of moving forward with him? And is there any precedent for an NFL quarterback or another athlete that you're kind of going along their timeline for having suffered a fractured glenoid bone?
So Mary Kay, more generally, Deshaun's progressing well. He's doing, everything in his power in terms of rehab. He's coming along well. We anticipate him being on a normal or potentially ahead of schedule time. I hesitate to say that because it still is early. But we're really pleased with his progress so far and certainly looking forward to getting him back when he comes in the spring.
And do you have anybody that you have – looked at that has suffered this same kind of fracture?
That's probably a better question for our medical staff, but probably the bigger takeaway is, like, we feel really good about the recovery. We don't there's nothing that would suggest that there should be some type of limitation or anything like that moving forward.
And kind of off of that, Deshaun, it seemed like every time he would seem like he was turning a corner, the rotator cuff, and then Baltimore game and the broken shoulder. Do you feel comfortable with where how much you've been able to evaluate of him in game settings, kind of going forward?
Yeah, we'd all love to have him on the field more often. I think that's safe to say, himself included. Do feel really good about him. Happy with the progress that he's made within our organization, both on the field and off the field. And we're looking forward to getting him back next year. We think he's going to have a really big year and have a ton of confidence in him as our starting quarterback.
Andrew, how would you characterize the trade? So almost to the halfway point, he's played 11 games since 2020. He's coming off right shoulder surgery now. How would you characterize the way the trade has gone to this point? And then what gives you optimism that he's going to get the level of Mahomes, Stroud, Lamar, and Allen, who hosted the first round playoff games to get where you want to go.
Jake, I honestly haven't spent a ton of time thinking about that. When we made the trade, we really looked at it as, hey, this is something that we'll evaluate like a 10-year time horizon because these guys play. Obviously, we want him on the field more often than he's been. You know, he can't helped the, you know, the shoulder injuries this year. But we're really pleased with him. You know, he's very talented. He's very hardworking. He's adaptable. You know, we really feel good about him moving forward.
All right, there you go. Andrew Berry. We'll have the second part of that coming up. Many of the questions from the assembled media there in regard to the quarterback position, Flacco potentially coming back or not, and then Deshaun Watson's health. And that's really jobs 1 through 50 is getting Deshaun healthy and ready to roll.
It's the whole enchilada, as they say. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, that's the thing you'll be pointing towards, and that's what everybody's pointing towards here. Other than that, wouldn't get into much in terms of the coaching, reported coaching changes that have happened, and so you wait on that, I guess, until I don't know.
Not at all. Nothing.
Yeah, nothing.
So
wouldn't budge.
We'll see. And again, remember what we said last week. This is Cleveland Browns Daily.
So we only do so much.
We only do so much in terms of the speculation. No. And the whatnot, the what haves use, the ins and outs. You know, we'll get this figured out. We'll figure out if the new hire means that Kevin Stefanski is giving up play calling or if the new hire means that he is not giving up play calling. And until we hear from him, we probably won't know.
When will Kevin be – well, is Combine the next time that he'll – is that probably it? Like Combine the next time he'll talk?
Or
maybe
like a full
coaching hire if everything's done?
Yeah. Maybe with the OC.
I don't like the sports awards. I think are this week. There could be a coach sighting there.
Yeah, but he's not obligated to go to that. Like he doesn't have.
Correct.
To.
There are little pop ups like the auto show.
Yeah, that's true.
Where you never know if that's going to happen. The next time they're supposed to talk is the combine.
Okay. All right. Good job, Gibby. Thank you, sir.
That's all I got.
I know. That's more than most. I appreciate the efforts that you had. We'll go around the league coming up next. You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet. Sports betting partner, your Cleveland Browns, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
And be part of one of the most passionate fan bases in the National Football League, NextGen STM, presented by Ticketmaster, official waitlist of your Cleveland Browns. Being a NextGen STM, your best chance to become a season ticket member in future seasons. Visit clevelandbrowns.com/NextGenSTM to reserve your spot today. As we go around the league, this just happened today, former Pro Bowl tight end Zach Ertz signing with the Lions practice squad if the Lions lost their number 2 tight end to injury to the Bucs. Remember, he asked for his release from Arizona after, like, Week 8, something
right,
like that.
And it was looking at the Eagles, looking at the Niners, and now he's going to go to the Lions. And he's somebody that can step in and definitely fit in as a pass catching tight end. He's not much of a blocking tight end, but he can fit into some of their 2 tight end sets, and it allows them to have some stuff that they probably really haven't shown.
No,
all year.
No, no, not at all.
With him and Laporta.
Yeah, and he hasn't. I mean, he hasn't played in so long. You assume he's healthy and fresh and ready to go for that game. That was, I know we get more on that in a second, but it just popped into my head. That was such a cool moment with Aiden Hutchinson just staring around at the end of that game and just looking at the crowd. And you think
it's
about
awesome.
Those people waiting 70 years to win they won 2 playoff games, first time since the 50s. And they got 2,
Swack it. Oh,
little kick.
Man. Jeez. Like he's playing hacky sack.
Of course he is. Could do whatever he wants. Running a business.
But
you wait 70 years, and then you get 2 home playoff games that are awesome.
Yeah, it's
you
great.
Win. They're thrilling. Your team's great. Eminem's in the house. All the people you'd want. Jeff Daniels in the mix. Bob Seger. Checks every box. It was just cool.
It's awesome.
Very cool.
I really enjoyed watching that
and
the atmosphere around it and all of it.
Yeah,
I
they were
it
ready.
Cool. I mean, the games you're left with are pretty great.
Yes.
This is what I wanted out of the NFC.
Yes, same.
If it was Cowboys, if Cowboys had looked good and it was Cowboys Niners, that would have been fine because of...
Yeah, the history and the unit, all of that. But I like the Lions
Me too.
Out there. I think that's fun.
Now I feel like I can't lose. I'm rooting for whoever comes out of the NFC in the Super Bowl, for sure.
For sure, yeah.
Mahomes, though, now all of a sudden, he goes and wins this one.
So this would be three, and it would be six straight championship games. You start to get
into –
That would
be five out of the – he's only lost, what, one championship game then?
He lost the one to Burrow.
Lost one to Brady.
Yeah, first one. First one to Brady, then he lost the one to Burrow 2 years ago.
So he's made four.
If he makes the Super Bowl, it'd be four out of 6 years of his first 6 years in the league. Four out of his first 6 years playing in the league, he made the Super Bowl.
Which is incredible.
Well, that's like the LeBron NBA Finals thing, the eight straight finals. It's like he's here every year we see this guy.
The difference in that is that in a five-on-five game, like one singularly great player, and obviously they stack the deck, you can run it, but like football is so hard.
Well, the other difference is unlike, and you and I are pretty staunch on our LeBron giving credit where it's due and his greatness and all of that. Mahomes is doing it, I would argue, in the tougher conference the whole time.
Yes.
So not only is you're going through dudes. If you go at Buffalo, at Baltimore, to get to another Super Bowl?
Yeah. Yeah. You got to go at Buffalo, at Baltimore, and then beat.
But even if he gets there again, and it's win, lose, like if he just keeps doing this pattern that he's on.
I feel like if it's Niners Chiefs, we'll get a lot of good Montana content from his Niners Chiefs.
So they played, didn't they beat him for the, that's the one with the slip, right? Yeah, that's it. What was the uniform matchup in that? Were the Cowboys, were the Niners in?
I believe they were in.
They were in red?
I was going
to say. Were they in white?
White. I believe they were in white. Let's see.
For some reason, I can't picture that game other than the slip.
Well, bit on the dig, man.
Yeah.
And then he just overthrew Emmanuel Sanders. And then he had the one that would have been touched on to Kittle, but Chris Jones knocked it down.
Yeah. Let's see. Probably the weirdest of the Mahomes ones was the loss to the Bucks.
Yeah. So Niners white, Chiefs red.
The Eagles are interviewing Ron Rivera for their open defensive coordinator job after they fired defensive coordinator Sean Desai yesterday. So there's a little bit of movement on that side of things.
Did they fire Matt Patricia too?
Yeah, he's a man without a country.
Patricia, he got fired as well?
Yeah. Man without the country.
I mean, he's a guy who's been able to convince a lot of countries to take him in after pretty much.
I think when he showed up in Detroit with a pencil in his ear, I said that's probably not going to work.
Yeah.
At that point.
No.
Jim Harbaugh met with the Chargers for the second time this week. It feels like he will be with the Chargers within the next couple of days, just as Belichick will be with the Falcons in the next couple of days.
Let's just lock it up, though. What are we waiting
for? Schrager said that the reason that the Falcons thing hasn't happened is because there are people in the front office there that don't want Belichick. Blank wants Belichick, but the front office people don't. And I would understand it because – right? Like it's corporate America.
Sure,
like
sure.
He comes in, we're out. So they don't want to lose their gigs. So the front office people in Atlanta are pushing against Belichick while Blank is pushing for, and guess who usually wins in those battles?
Yeah.
The guy who owns the team. The Bears are hiring current Seahawks offensive coordinator Shane Waldron as their offensive coordinator. One of the most absolutely stupefying things I've seen this offseason is the Bears, who are very clearly going to take Caleb Williams, not starting from scratch.
It's wild. So does he have to be like associate head coach?
Probably, right?
And
in order to take a parallel?
Pelissero reporting.
Or because Carroll left. Does that open it up? Because Carroll left? And so there's a change in dynamic.
He's from the Shanahan tree. Strong candidate, first to interview. Interesting.
Yeah. Very. Very
so that
interesting.
Opens up for whoever ends up in Seattle. They're going to a new OC, or it opens up for Andy Dickerson, who we interviewed, who was their O-line coach, to just kind of bump up into OC.
Yeah. All right. Coming up next, we'll do the guess the spread for the championship games. Plus, hear some tremendous audio from around championship weekend. Also get part two of the Andrew Berry Presser. One thing on all of the games from the weekend. You listen to Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, sports betting partner of Cleveland Browns, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
OBM, the preferred provider of copiers and document services for the Cleveland Browns. You can tackle any size office. That number is 216-485-2000. Visit OhioBusinessMachines.com. Before we get to some of the best calls of the weekend, time for Dr. Z to guess the spread for championship weekend. These games will be played on Sunday in the AFC.
What's the order?
Chiefs and Ravens first.
Niners primetime.
Yep. So it'll be Romo, Nance, 3 o'clock. And they snuck a Jay Feely in there.
Yeah, on the
side. Got a little Jay Feely. He's like their kicking expert now, in addition to the rules expert.
Well, and Nance goes to the rules expert a lot. He goes to Terry a lot.
Yeah. We had Jay Feely was with Tom McCarthy and James Lofton for our final game. They had like a three-man TV booth.
Correct. Yeah, we had Feely in the booth.
All right, so there you go. So that's at Baltimore, 3 o'clock Sunday.
Ravens minus 3.
Got it. Ravens minus 3.5. They got that. That's it. Be interested to see where that one is. Okay. And then
I said 3.5 originally, but then I figured it could be 2.5 because it's Mahomes. So yeah. I wanted to hit 3 and I
hit 3 and you nailed it. Yeah. So 3.5 is the number on that one. And then the evening game, the 6:30 game, this is Fox. This is Olsen and Burkett and Rinaldi and
Aaron Andrews.
Yeah. On that one. So that's your 6:30 kick out in the place of your youth, the Bay Area.
Feels like Niners. Niners minus 6.5.
Nailed it exactly. Nailed it exactly. Good job out of you.
And that's what, and then this one I had written 7, but I was like, it's not going to be 7.5. It's not going to be over a touchdown. So whatever. So yeah, these are, I mean, that those they lined up perfectly.
Yep.
I think.
Yep. Yeah, they did. They did. They're both great.
Initial leans right now would be Lions, Ravens.
Initial lean would be Lions as well, but I don't want to overreact to what I saw last week. You crushed it this week. I think I was 2 for 2, two and two again.
That's 3-1.
Not great. And then
I'm just up to your level. Now I'm 68 over 500.
I just don't even know if I can do. How can I ever go against Mahomes again? Just seems crazy.
Ravens are beating people. I mean, that's 3 games. Niners, Dolphins,
Texans. The Bills
hadn't
lost in a while.
Yeah.
They went to their joint.
If it was in Kansas City, I'd feel. But the Ravens right now are just – the Ravens seem pretty primed.
Yeah, that dude.
You had those good Mahomes stats.
Mahomes is just
though.
A
Mahomes
supernova,
very good
man.
Against them.
All right. These are good. These are some of the best calls from the weekend from the various people on the network calls. These are both television and radio calls. Let's start with – this one is from 106.5, The Wolf in Kansas City.
So this one is interesting. Maybe not the original call, but the random saying on the back end that I'm like, okay, what is going on?
We need to have this. So this is Mitch.
How did the color guys do in these situations, Gibbe?
Pretty good.
Pretty good?
Pretty good. And we'll get to Lomas and the Lions.
So here's Mitch Holtis. He's on the call for the Isaiah Pacheco game-winning touchdown for the Chiefs.
All right, goal to go at the 4-yard line for the Chiefs, trailing 24-20. They give it off to Pacheco, slamming on the left side, angling into the end zone, touchdown! Kansas City, Pop gargles the sweet nectar of the end zone, and the Chiefs are back in front, 26-24.
Come again?
Yeah.
Pop?
That's exactly right.
No, Pop
anything to find.
But
I don't know what that means.
Is Pop a nickname for Isaiah Pacheco?
It is. I just looked it up. It is his nickname.
Okay. Pop gargles.
Still saying Pop gargles the sweet nectar of the end zone.
Right?
Play again. One more.
All right, goal to go at the 4-yard line for the Chiefs, trailing 24-20. They give it off to Pacheco, slamming on the left side, angling into the end zone, touchdown! Kansas City, Pop gargles the sweet nectar of the end zone, and the Chiefs are back in front, 26-24.
Okay.
So gargles the sweet nectar of the end zone.
Which would imply that the end zone
is a fruit.
At some point makes available a nectar.
Yeah.
It produces a liquid that you could.
Why would you gargle it? Just drink it.
All good questions.
Pop drinks, guzzles. All of those would probably be better than gargles.
I've heard
the
sweet
gargle.
What are the things you gargle?
Wrench into
mouthwash.
This.
Mouthwash. Salt water.
Salt water. Is that it?
That's it.
That's the only things I do.
Not sweet nectar of the
not,
end zone.
Not any sweet nectar of any sort.
Right.
All right. Here is this is Jim Nance and
like,
Tony Romo.
Remember Kearns?
I do. Yeah.
They never had an end zone flavor.
No, there was not an end zone flavor of that.
Peach, pear.
That's it.
Pear was delightful.
Pear, if done right, can be pretty good.
Oh, you remember this?
Yep.
Drink an apricot on your yacht.
Of course I remember that.
What a line there.
That's a great line.
Because if you're on a yacht, you're going to have an apricot currency.
Why wouldn't you want it? Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, can I have champagne,
no.
caviar on your yacht? You're going to have drinking an apricot. By the way, I'm pretty sure if you're on a yacht, you could have the finest fresh apricot juice brought to you.
Pure juice.
Pressed for you.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, those things tend to run in the same circles.
I always thought that was good advertising.
It is very good. Yeah. This is Nance and Romo on CBS. Tyler Bass's missed field goal, 44 yards wide right.
He has tremendous support in the building. If he has to make one for us, the game on the line, he will. 44 yards, Bass. No, he doesn't make it. Wide right.
Wow.
The two most dreaded words in Buffalo have surfaced again.
Romo with the wow.
The Romo wow is great.
Yeah.
That was probably the best thing he did on that broadcast last night.
He's struggling.
It feels like, I don't even know. Like, he just doesn't care and is making almost a mockery of it.
I think that once when he was doing the predictive stuff, people loved that so much right away. And I think my hunch is CBS was like, dude, we can't have you telling them what's going to happen the next play. Like, even Nance would be like, what are we doing? We can't have you, you can't tell what's going to happen in the next play. And then once that trick was worn out, there's no more tricks.
Yeah.
It's tough. It's not great. It's not great. And they locked him in for big, big cash. His timing.
Nance was great, though, right there, wide right.
Nance was great. Of course.
Two words.
He's always prepared.
Yeah.
Always prepared.
He probably was prepared for a missed field goal wide right.
I'm sure he's prepared for every possible. Yeah.
The interesting part of this whole thing is right before the kick. Like, they've got ultimate confidence. Coach McDermott, ton of confidence in him. Oh, wait, it went wide right, and you're going home.
Yeah, brutal.
Well, of course you got to have him. You can send him out there with confidence. Of course he's got confidence.
This one from back for the Kansas City game, or in that same game, rather, 106.5 The Wolf in Kansas City. This is Mitch Holtis on the call of the Tyler Bass missed field goal.
This is not necessarily a gimme field goal for Bass. Chiefs 27, Bills 24, 1:47 to go. In the game on fourth down and 9 for the Buffalo. Placement down. Bass's kick is up, and the kick is no good. A little prophecy. Tyler Bass has struggled, and he just misses the kick.
Kansas City will next snap with a 34-yard.
And the Chiefs will take over at the point of the missed kick. Their own 34-yard line as Tyler Bass misses this wide to the right. He skanked one wide to the left against Pittsburgh, and you just wonder on the overcorrection, the Chiefs catch a break on a missed field goal by Buffalo.
All right, so that's twice that we have words that I think another word would have were clearly in that one. He was looking for the other one. Shank is probably what he's looking for there.
I would imagine.
As opposed to what came out.
By what was the prophecy?
Just that he had said right before that this
is not
a gimme.
That was the prophecy? No, that's not what a prophecy is.
I don't believe that's what a prophecy is, sir.
A boy
who needs a color guy?
On the full moon.
Not when you're doing that.
He will rise to be a field goal kicker and miss the most important kick of his life.
Not that.
No, that's a prophecy.
That is a prophecy if that were to happen. Let's go to the Detroit game. This is 97.1 The Ticket. Lions play-by-play man Dan Miller, former Lion and great Lomas Brown, on the call of the Baker Mayfield interception to seal the win for the Lions.
Baker leans in. There's the snap. Blitz comes. Mayfield back. Loads. Throws. Picked up by the Lions. Intercepted by the Lions. Intercepted by the Lions. Derek Barnes. Derek Barnes. Oh, baby. 1:33 to go. The Lions are going to San Francisco.
Yes.
Derek Barnes with the interception. Oh, baby. Stand up, Ford Field. Look at this.
Woo.
Look at this.
How many yeses were there? Right, like 9?
All right. Two things. Number one, this guy obviously listens to DLD because he's using Oh Baby.
Oh Baby.
Yep. Oh Baby. Two of them. There is a double Oh Baby. Number two, had I had the audacity to perform my role in the manner which Lomas Brown did right there, Jim Donovan would have punched me right in the face.
Square the throat.
I like the throat punch better.
Right in the throat.
Just a subtle, nope, we're not going to do that.
That's it.
Good on the guy for he just kept going and made his call, but like
I do think when you have like a Lomas Brown type in there, like what are you going to tell him?
Well,
the guy's a legend. He may join us later this week.
Hulking human too.
For sure, but like at the same time, you have to let that like. You need the combination of like, the call and, see, the, and the audience.
It's always a tricky one though because it's like there's some people that's like the guys in Cincinnati, like that's their thing, they jump all over everything. I don't know if that's a thing.
I don't know if it's their thing. It's one person's thing.
Well, the other guy likes it though too because I've asked him directly about it. We've had him on and asked directly about it. Yeah. Is it Lapham who's the play-by-play down there?
Yeah,
we've asked Dave about it, and he was like. That's all part of it. Like, it's all. Yeah. So, I don't know.
I don't know what he says in the recesses of his.
No, we don't know that. We don't know that. But, yes.
No, that's also on the producer. A little friendly reminder. Hey, remember the moment.
Yeah.
I understand being overwhelmed with emotion. Like, I can.
Absolutely.
I've done it.
Yeah.
My first game, wasn't screaming yes or.
Over and over.
No.
Over again. Imagine if you just isolated the Lomas Brown yeses. Took everything else out and just yes, 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 yes. That's great.
Just a heck of a
lot of ways you can go.
Keep going for it.
Here's from Fox. This is the Niners and Packers. Kevin Burkhart, Greg Olson. This is Drake Greenlaw's interception to seal the deal for the 49ers.
Love. Pressure up the middle. Runs away. Throws across his body. And that is picked. 49ers have it. Greenlaw. Still up. He needs to get down. Greenlaw's still on his feet.
He's got to go down.
Just go down, and the game's over. San Francisco takes over.
They were exactly right. I was screaming at TV, get down. You
sure
picked
you
it
were.
Off, get down.
And you had the other way. I was screaming, go.
No.
Go. And
get
as
down.
He's running, I was thinking to myself, I wonder if he threw the points.
I am
like he was running like he was trying to score. There was no reason to score. It's over. It's done.
I wasn't even worried
about
running
the scores. Across this.
I was worried
and
about
I'm going like
the
what are you
out.
Doing? Yeah. Like why are you doing this?
Yeah, my dad not pleased with
he's running.
Yeah, he's like just get down.
It's like he was running like he was trying to score a desperation touchdown.
All right, couple things. That one could have been picked by about three different guys on the Niners.
That was way worse than the Baker.
No
was,
chance to get in.
There was no reason. They were only 25 yards from a field
goal. Well, that was
too.
A horrible decision. Baker's was more like basic quarterback play.
No read.
You don't.
Didn't read it.
Stare the guy down and then throw it right to the defender who's already in perfect position. Although Baker did make some great plays in that one. I got to ask, though, and maybe you've seen more on this because you had more hours on another program to fill this morning. Why does Chauncey Gardner-Johnson hate Baker so much? You saw the first pick, he's over there giving to him, and then after the game went on social media, ripping him apart.
Do you have the answer, Uno?
I do.
Go.
So I don't know where Baker said this, but he had mentioned at some point that Chauncey Gardner-Johnson doesn't watch a lot of film. And
why
so,
would he say that? In what context?
But he did that in response to Gardner-Johnson saying something earlier this week.
Yeah, so then, well, Baker said that, and that apparently is what made CJ Gardner-Johnson mad, and then he flipped him the ball. And then CJ, after the game, said, who's watched more film now, or something like that, to come back at Baker. So they've had a little war.
Well, to the victor goes the spoils.
Yeah, and I don't see anything like in their past. Like, they're the same age. You know, he's in the 19 draft,
and
he's in New Orleans, Philly, and Detroit, and he went to Florida. Like, he wouldn't have crossed paths with Baker at Florida. I don't know.
I don't know, but it felt...
Felt personal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was personal. All right. Coming up next, part two of the Andrew Berry conversation with the assembled media. You listen to Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Good sleep should come naturally. And with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between award-winning mattress brand Leesa and home design favorite West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is the culmination of these two companies' shared values. Premium materials, meticulous craftsmanship, and sustainable practices. Made with natural latex, responsibly sourced natural wool, and environmentally safe foams, the Natural Hybrid elevates your sleep sanctuary, indulges your senses, and supports a greener tomorrow. Plus, when you purchase the Natural Hybrid, you're also helping fuel Leesa's work with shelters and those in need. Since 2015, Leesa has donated more than 40,000 mattresses to ensure children and families have a safe place to sleep. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Leesa mattress mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit leesa.com/iHeart. That's leesa.com/iHeart.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Elk and Elk, serious lawyers, serious injuries. Call 1-800-ELK-OHIO for a free case review. Elk and Elk's proud partner of your Cleveland Browns. And now let's hear part two of Andrew Berry from the podium.
Andrew, I know you mentioned Jim earlier. Like, the defense was obviously so good for so much of the year. There were a few key lapses, obviously, including in the wild card. Like, how are those thought about, talked about, and, you know, going forward here, what's the plan regarding those and some of that, you know, sack production especially?
Yeah, so I guess maybe two separate questions there, Ashley. In terms of the wild card round, I think just as a team, you know, we picked a bad day to have a bad day against, you know, a good team and a good quarterback. And, you know, we made a lot of errors that up until that point hadn't been characteristic of our team, but also give Houston a ton of credit. They, you know, they had a good plan. They played well. And when you're in the playoffs, you know, the margin of error is even slimmer than what we talk about in the regular season. So, you know, as we go into the offseason, I'm not necessarily overreacting based off of one game. We really do look at the body of work. In terms of the sack production, you know, I think, I better say I didn't know this till JW mentioned it, but I think you guys may know this, something like we set the franchise sack record this year or something along those lines. So I don't have really a problem with that. But I would say, like, probably the bigger picture is we're actually probably a little bit more focused on how much pressure we create, because ultimately that's what leads to negative plays for an offense and, you know, advantageous plays for a defense. And we were really pleased with that this year.
I know you mentioned Kevin Edwards.
Can I go, Daryl, first, and I'll come back to you?
Wait,
did you get a question yet, Scott? I'm going with you. I like you better. Go ahead.
You mentioned Kevin has a really high ceiling that he hasn't come close to. What makes you think that, and what are those areas, I guess, you think they can still grow?
Yeah, so I think probably two areas. I think, one, we talk a lot with employees across the organization of hiring people with a growth mindset. People that are continuous learners. And I think you see that in, you know, not even just great coaches, but, you know, probably high achievers across industries. Like, you know, if you even think about, like, Andy Reid might be my favorite. You know, here's someone when he was a 40-something-year-old first-time head coach in Philly, and you look at how he's evolved as a coach or leader and offensive mind to where he is in Kansas City. You know, he never stayed stagnant. And we see those same characteristics in Kevin, and I would suggest that probably everybody in this room has seen him grow and evolve as a leader and coach over these past 4 years. You know, how he led and managed the year this year, where I don't know how he wouldn't win Coach of the Year this year versus, you know, his first year, were different. And I think the second part of it is, like, I always say, like, Kevin is, like, he's the best of us, like, on a just a human level. He, like, truly is the best of us. And I think that authenticity really, really allows him to be an exceptional leader for our organization. So it's really those two things combined that, you know, make me excited for the next several years. Go ahead, Darryl.
Softball for you now. you mentioned, though, tough decisions that you're going to have to make going forward. Probably one of the most difficult is Nick Chubb coming off that injury, cap savings versus being loyal to a fan favorite and an outstanding player. Just where is he at in his recovery here, and just your thoughts on that particular situation?
Okay. So with Nick, I probably came into this year let's say on a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of respect for Nick Chubb, it was a 10, and probably coming out of this year, it's now a 20. Nick, like, you would have never guessed that Nick was out for the season with how he operated within the building. I mean, it was like he was doing 2-a-day practices for, you know, for rehab. And I remember, a quick story, we were in LA for the Rams game, and he was in the player suite. I happened to pop up in there, And the suite, it's like humongous, first of all. It's like, it might be like 30 yards in length. And he was walking, you know, to go get food, but it's a pretty long walk. But he wasn't using his crutches. And I was like, Nick, are you being stubborn? And you're not. He's like, no, it actually like feels pretty good. Like they're saying, I was like, Nick, like if you're supposed to be on your crutches, you'd be on your crutches. Well, we come back from the trip. And then the next day, you know, Dr. Vuce, they had like put out this like tape because they were going to just test how he was. And they're like, oh, no, officially, like he doesn't need to be on his crutches anymore. Like he had walked the whole thing. It was normal. And I share that, like, he's still very early in his rehab process. But like the tenacity at which he has attacked his rehab, and which, you know, he did everything in his power this year to heal himself, but also make a positive impact with the team. It culminated. You guys know he's not like a super talkative person, but for him to do the whole Batman thing, you know, in front of the Jets game, it's like he wanted to do everything in his power to help the team win. So, you know, I would, in terms of Nick moving forward, you know, obviously I understand that's a little bit the elephant in the room. You know, Nick, I can say for myself, no one in the organization, I understand our family, nobody wants to see you know, that carry in Pittsburgh, you know, be the last time he carries the ball for the Cleveland Browns. And, you know, obviously there are things that we'll have to work through, but, you know, that would not be our intention as well. We obviously will work to keep him on the team.
Andrew, as you just look at roster management in general, what's your top priority?
Probably a better combine question, but even then I probably won't answer it quite directly if I'm just being honest, but we'll spend the next few weeks, you know, working through all that, and then ultimately we'll set a strategy to execute at the start of the league year.
Andrew, similar to that though, you've done such a good job of signing players to one-year contracts. I know you'll say you want everybody back, but that probably won't happen. So how do you keep doing that? Like, is it Darius Smith, Hurst, Shelby Harris, all those guys? How do you keep finding these guys for 1 year?
Jeff, I think one of the things that you realize is, you know, the NFL, the only constant is change. I think, you know, when I met with you guys after 2020, I mentioned that even for, you know, the top teams or teams that have, you know, a lot of their guys under contract, there's typically like on average a third of your team turns over, and that's regardless of your record. And it could be more depending on, you know, the health of your roster. I mean, more like long-term health as opposed to physical health. So I think as a general manager, you really go into the offseason understanding that, you know, running it back really isn't an option. It's just not with the, you know, with the economic realities of our sport. So I'd say, one, acknowledging that reality going into it and then trying to make the best decisions that you can to improve the club. It's really as simple as that.
The way that you are, you know, raving about Kevin, is it safe to say that an extension is in order and, you know, sometime fairly soon?
I understand the question. I have to say though, Mary Kay, if I don't talk about players in this, you guys probably don't have a great shot of me talking about that as well. But we're really happy with Kevin.
And just to be clear, when you say carry three quarterbacks on the roster, do you mean the 53, or is that kind of a practice squad spot?
We'll get to those details when we get to the season. But typically, like, I don't have a problem with that on the active if we have the right mix.
Three.
Yeah.
Andrew, with the every year we ask you about the cap space, and, you know, we know the kind of circumstances you're in, but are you, do you still feel like you can do whatever you need to do in free agency and make the moves you need to do given the restraints you face?
I do.
Just the ability to shift things around, or why do you feel so confident?
You know, as we look at, you know, the contract management space, it's not something that we think about just at the time or, you know, 1 year at a time, Scott. It's something that you really do spend multiple years planning for. That's an area that we're very confident in, and we view it as a strategic advantage for us. And we'll continue to operate in a way that allows us to maximize the team.
There are a lot of young guys on the team this season, guys having to step up for that next man up role. As a whole, how do you feel like the development of those guys went, and what's the aim as you head into next season?
Yeah, Cam, really, really pleased with our coaches and our player development staff in those areas. It's something that we've poured a lot of resources into operationally. So, you know, not, let's say, non-roster considerations. And it's really rewarding to see the fruits of, you know, those investments, you know, pay off on a year-to-year basis. So I can't give enough credit to the assistants, you know, our player development staff, our performance staff headed by, you know, Sean Holes, our player development group headed by Carson Walsh. You know, those individuals have done a really, really nice job.
Brian Callahan's receiving head coaching offers. Can you retain Bill, his dad, at all costs, or what are your plans there?
Yeah, that would probably fall into the bucket of, you know, staff. It's a good question, Tony. I definitely understand the interest there. We obviously value Bill very highly. He's done a great job with us the past four seasons. You know, but I probably don't feel comfortable commenting on that until we address the coaching staff.
Did Miles' shoulder injury impact him down the stretch? He got hurt in Denver, and then, you know, a lot of his pressure rate was similar. Kevin has talked about that, but the sack numbers just completely disappeared after that injury. So I'm just wondering, how much did he really play through down the stretch to keep himself on the field?
Yeah, I think regardless of how much he played through, he played at a really high level for us down the stretch. So, you know, he does a really good job of managing his body. He's very, very proactive. He does a lot that is not visible in the building. He does a lot outside the building to make sure that he can perform at a peak level. And he's always done that. That's not just even a recent occurrence. But, you know, probably the larger point for me is I know the focus is on sack numbers, but the reality of it is that really doesn't tell the whole story, or even enough of the story, to be honest, Daryl. He's the defensive player of the year. So
do you think he has another level still that he can get to, though, in terms of, you know, everything in his career?
I hope all our players do, but also, if I'm being honest, like, I mean, this guy is a guy who's been a first team all pro and will hopefully take away his first defensive player of the year award this season. You know, I think at times, you know, we hold Miles to like a Superman standards, which, look, he deserves. He looks like Superman, and like he's played so well for, you know, the first 6 or 7 years of his career. But we're really pleased with him.
Watch these games, and you just see Patrick going to the AFC Championship game year after year after year, and so many Super Bowls. I mean, do you feel like, I mean, this is obviously a very pivotal time for you and your organization. Are you going to be able to get past Patrick and, some of the amazing quarterbacks in this AFC?
It's Mary Kay, it's a very, very competitive league, and it's a very, very competitive conference, right? The AFC has a number of really strong teams, and I feel like we have three of them in our division. And so we realize how competitive it is, and it's a big reason why, you know, as we look forward, every decision has to be made with the understanding that, you know, we play a zero-sum game. You either win or you lose, and we want to best position our organization to be playing deep in the playoffs. Because you're right, if we're going to reach our goals, you know, we're going to have to beat, you know, the Patrick Mahomes of the world, and it's not going to get any easier anytime soon.
Andrew, speaking of the growth mindset, how are you a better GM today than you were a couple years ago, 3 or 4 years ago?
Yeah, I think mentioned this, you know, experience is a very, very hard teacher, because it gives the test first and the lessons afterwards. You know, so, you know, I'll share with you, like, every year, you know, we keep kind of a decision diary, and it's a decision diary that's based off of roster transactions. It's based off of, you know, not just on-field decisions, but off-field decisions. And it's something that, you know, we both organization, but me individually, I reflect and learn off of. And that could be draft, free agency, trade. It can be different crisis issues. It can be, you know, management issues within football operations or with the coaching staff. And, you know, quite honestly, like, the things I learn from most are the ones that where we make mistakes, whether it's a draft pick, whether it's, you know, a contract decision, you name it, a trade. And I really try and carry forward those lessons with decision making. I'd say probably the biggest thing is, like, if you ask my staff, I am not a very patient man. And while I would still not maybe characterize myself as, like, patient, I'm a lot more patient now than I was 4 years ago. And I'd say that patience is with, you know, transactions, decisions, you know, whatever. Like, I am very aggressive, but that comes with a little bit of a double-edged sword. And so that's probably the biggest thing that, like, as I see, you know, more cycles in my own role, there's a little bit more pattern recognition. And there's a little bit less of your staff having to maybe, like, pull your coattails to, like, slow you down and make sure you're not quite ready, fire, aim all the time. So that would probably be the biggest area of growth for me.
Andrew, there's been a lot of talk about culture, especially this year. How, in what ways do you feel like has led to that growth, improvement, and how do you kind of carry it now forward? Where does the responsibility fall to carry that forward?
I think it falls on all of us, Chris. You know, I think that, like, as I think through each of the teams that we've had over the first 4 years here, I really do think that it's like you really establish like your culture. Culture is people, like, every year with the team. Like, I'd like to think that you just carry over everything from year to year, but there's just too much turnover to do it. And I think if, like, your messaging or your approach just stays the same every year, it's just a different group of individuals. Like, if you look at the players that are in our locker room in 2023 versus 2020, it's just a totally different group of players, and it's a totally different group of coaches and support staff as well. So I think that's something that's a challenge each season. But I actually do want to share a story on this. You know, one of the probably the, aside from, like, the disappointment in terms of the loss with Houston, probably the memory that's, like, seared into my mind. I remember, you know, late in the game, so Joel had gone into the locker room with a pretty significant high ankle sprain. And the game, for all intents and purposes, was really kind of out of hand late. And Joe came back onto the field despite the fact that it shouldn't have been something that he really was playing through, just because he wanted to be out there with his teammates. Later in that fourth quarter, Wyatt goes down. He stings his calf again. You know, the thing is, he had, like, maybe a grade 2 calf strain. You know, he's in a boot Sunday after the game. And I see him go down. I see him, like, hobble up again. You know, we might have been down 30 points at that point. And he gets up. Again, I'm like, you know, he really should come out. Does everything he can to will and stay in the game. And I remember in that moment thinking, that's pretty cool, because here are two of our, like, veteran players. There's really nothing to play for competitively because, you know, we really don't have enough time to come back. But they realized in that moment that was the last time that specific group was going to play together forever, quite honestly. Like, and all they wanted to do was be out there with their teammates, you know, for this player moment. And one of the things I wrote down in my OneNote, moving forward, was like, I think we have something here. Like, I think we have something here with this group of players and some of the guys who are going to return. And that visual is going to be the thing that motivates me this offseason to do everything that I can to improve the team and make sure that we're in a position playing deep into the playoffs next year. So,
do you think it's important or a good idea with your coaching vacancy to have someone associated with Watson who coached him before?
Okay, I'll answer one question, Tony, on the coaching staff. You got me. All right. I don't. We're going to look for the best people. We're just going to look for the best people, and it's just as simple as that.
Do you anticipate retaining Glenn and Catherine on your staff and maintaining most of your other personnel staff?
You know, I think that remains to be seen until all the vacancies fill, to be honest, Mary Kay. So, you know, January really is self-assessment month and see how things, see how things turn out.
Andrew, as you go through the self-assessment here, you've talked about the big picture goal, trying to win a Super Bowl here. So how do you measure where this team is right now in the big picture of the NFL hierarchy, and how close do you think you are?
Yeah, I don't know that I'm going to talk about all of that, Daryl. Like, that's certainly something as we evaluate the team and the organization that we talk about in depth over the next few weeks. But as I mentioned earlier, it's not a continuation of this year. Next year is a brand new year. How many people pick the Texans to be in the divisional round, this year, realistically. So I, we'll attack 2024 with a fresh perspective, because you know, at the end of the day, I don't know that this year is really going to matter or factor into next year. Kelsey, go ahead.
More.
When you go back, going back to the culture aspect, but what Jim has been able to do defensively, do you think that is possible to carry over to next season, and like even with all the turnover on rosters?
It's a good question. Not fully, just because you are dealing with new individuals. But I do think that there will be principles that we'll want to carry. Like, we'll never sacrifice, you know, wanting to play with, you know, physical toughness and energy and swag and, you know, things like that. But ultimately, how that gets implemented and how that gets executed will change from year to year.
Provided that no one leaves from the coaching staff, are you guys done with coaching moves?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that first part, Jim.
I said provided no one leaves for another job, are you guys done making moves on the coaching staff?
Yeah, I don't – that's still – you know, all that stuff is still to be worked out, to be honest. Yeah, and so I don't feel comfortable commenting on that until it's finalized, just to be fair.
All right, there you go. Coming up next, one thought for all of the divisional games. You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, sports betting partner of Cleveland Browns, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
If your game plan for the season includes buying or selling a home, Howard Hanna has the answer for you, delivering a winning strategy for breaking down the game of real estate. Market leaders in Northeast Ohio, more buyers and sellers trust Howard Hanna to be their winning home team. Visit howardhanna.com/gobrowns today. So in the break, we were discussing the end of Detroit and Tampa, and I told you in the break, and I'll share for the audience, we were trying to get dinner in before the start of the second game. And Beamsy said, he looked at the, was watching, he goes, Dad, why aren't they using a timeout? And I, what I said to him, and I didn't give another thought because then it was over until you brought it up in the break. And I said to him, well, I said, maybe they have the graphic wrong and maybe Tampa doesn't have any timeouts. I said, that's my guess. I said, they must just probably have the graphic wrong. And I honestly haven't thought about it since until you brought it up in the break that they did not. That in fact, they had a timeout.
They did. And I'm watching it. Goff snaps it on 3rd and 12 with 38 seconds to go with 15 seconds still on the play clock. So they could have run it down to 23 seconds. He snaps it. His knee hits the ground at 36 seconds.
Yeah. So do you take a timeout? Take a timeout at 36 seconds.
They have to kick a field goal on fourth down, which now let's call it 5 seconds for a field goal.
Yep.
If he makes it, it's over. It's 34-23. Game's over.
Set match, yeah.
If he misses it, and Michael Badgley has not been a great distance kicker for his career, it's like under 50%. If he misses it, they would have gotten the ball back on their own 39, down 8 with 31 seconds.
Like, and Mike Evans.
Is it likely? No, but is it possible still? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Think about the throw that Joe Flacco made to Jacoby Jones. That was with 20 seconds left, and that was 70 yards.
Mm-hmm.
So
Things happen.
So they asked Bowles about it after the fact, and he gives, to me, this is like, you got to stay calm, but emotionally this feels like a fireable offense to me.
Okay.
This is what he said. They already had the field goal lined up. There would have been about 12 seconds left on the clock to end the ball game. We weren't going to come back from that. No sense in prolonging the obvious. His knee hit the ground on third down with 36 seconds. There is no world in which they would have gotten the ball back with 12 seconds. What I don't understand is, wasn't somebody yelling at him in the headset, take the timeout? Shouldn't there have been a player who was like,
hey,
timeout? The Lions were buffoons too.
They were snapping it
with 15 seconds to go. Was there an agreement? Was Bowles like, yeah, don't worry, we're done? I would have been going nuts. I imagine Baker had to be going nuts. Be like, make him make a 49-yard field goal.
Yeah, it's not like this wasn't a 30-yarder.
Why wouldn't you have tried to get the first down that actually ended the game?
Yeah, they took the knee too soon right away.
Yes.
You said it. I think maybe you were right. Maybe just the emotion in the break. You said, was it just the emotion of the interception?
It's just like game's over.
Game's over.
But not.
Not.
I just, and then his, to me, the explanation when you can go back and look at what the time was seems completely crazy to me.
it's funny, NFL teams that have all of this information, you know, at their fingertips, whether it's that one, and that's an egregious example of it, or, you know, what Buffalo did on the fake punt, just make these type of decisions over and over and over again.
Yeah.
This is it's an incredible miss.
By both teams. Totally.
It's weird that, to your point, that the Lions didn't just, let's just go run it and get a first down.
Because they needed to fully, completely ice it. Now, if they had taken the play clock down on all of them, then they would have had that opportunity. It would have been about 12
seconds.
But
why seconds. Did they not? And they didn't. So once they don't, why aren't you stopping it?
I always think in those situations where you don't care about anything other than the clock, snap it at 1 second, or in some cases, take what's the 5 yards,
man? Who cares, yeah.
Get every second out of it that you possibly can.
Yeah.
Wild to me. Completely insane.
Yeah, that was. I mean, 31 seconds, it's quite a bit of time.
31 seconds? Yes!
That's a lot. I mean, you could throw to the middle of the field with 31 seconds.
Get up, spike it, and take a shot to the end zone.
And you got Mike Evans.
What if he breaks a tackle?
Yeah.
I just...
Yeah, wild.
Completely wild. And what's funny is I didn't know in the moment. I just saw the pick and was like, oh, I'm going to go, you know, I'm getting the bolognese.
Doing same.
Things. So I was like, pick, game's over.
Yeah.
And then I saw some bounce, and then I was like, wait. And I went back and watched it.
Yeah.
Because you had a few minutes time. Between. Like, I, by the way, liked how quickly it went.
Right to another one.
But I went back and watched it, like, in real time. I was going, what is going on?
Yeah, I never thought about it again.
And they really didn't say anything, though, wrong. Either.
No, the broadcast didn't either.
No.
Strange.
Real odd. I think it was everybody's like, oh, the interception's, the game's over.
Game's over.
But wasn't.
So much more to come. You'll listen to Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
All right, tomorrow on the program, the Hoff will drop by from the Germany. He was skiing in the Alps. He was in Austria. He was hunting in Spain. He's the world's most interesting man.
He's having, like, it's awesome. He's like, they're just running around having a great time. The kids are loving it, keeping them, you know, in adventures.
Yeah.
They're just, you see the one with Annie brought, like, 38 hot dogs back.
I did.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Living their best life. It's fantastic. So we'll have that to look forward to.
Yes.
We'll do one thought as well. A little bit of better or worse. That is tomorrow. The next level is coming up next. Thanks for listening, everybody. Cleveland Browns Daily, 850 ESPN Cleveland.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.